This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Guillermo Rickerson of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
I'm trying to get the people saying frequency.
Frequency.
No, not frequency.
Frequency. You are listening to Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM. This program is Frequency, and my name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sound made by birds and humans inspired by birds. And today's guest is Christopher Funkhauser, who is a writer, musician, and multimedia artist based in Staatsburg, Dutchess County. Chris hosts the Poet Radio program at WGXC, and I've been using his field recording as my bed music on this show for a while, and I wanted to ask him more about the relationship between his art practice and birds, and so I visited him and he told me about one of his latest projects, Media Safari, which documents his walks in the woods alongside Hudson River. The natural sounds he captures that feature many birds, and his writing on these safaris remind us to cherish each unique and ephemeral moment we experience in nature. I spoke with Chris by the Dragonfly Pond, where one of his explorations with recording gear took place, and the interview begins where I was asking him to talk about who he was. So let's listen to the interview. Thanks for tuning in. This is Frequency on WGXC.
I mean, primarily I'm a writer. I mean, that's, you know, that's what my life has been about for almost 40 years. And, you know, I do music and sound a lot now, but, you know, my real identity is in writing poetry specifically. And I do lots of audio engineering with writers. I'm an editor at Penn Sound, which is the largest archive of poets reading their own work online at the University of Pennsylvania. So I've been editing there for about 15 or 20 years, and that's very gratifying work. And I've done these very extensive single author recording projects for Penn Sound. So I don't write as much poetry as I used to, but I'm still heavily involved with it. working with other people, and the radio show too. Mm-hmm. Poet Radio, it's all poetry. So
that makes a good intro, because the first question would have been, could you introduce yourself?
That's what I thought you asked me. I already thought I thought I heard the first question.
I sent it telepathic, or maybe you read my mind. Could you also say your name?
Yeah, my name is Christopher Funkhauser, born 1964.
And you're currently now a resident of, this is Dutchess County?
This is Dutchess County, Statsburg. And yeah, I've been in and out of this area for the past 10 years. We lived 3 years in Connecticut, which was partly responsible for my, I mean, it was the pandemic. Mm. So there wasn't a lot to do in terms of socializing, but you live on a mountainside where there's lots of trees. We lived right next to a park, a big park called Tanager Hill. Wow. And sure enough, it was a great, you know, great place to watch birds and hear birds. And the Farmington River was just below our house in this mountain, and Tanager Hill were right up and beside our house. So the other thing I do is I'm a cyclist. I ride my bike a lot. And in Connecticut, there were many, many rail trails, many beautiful trails. And that's where I first identified the Veery.
Oh.
Was on a rail trail. So that made me happy. I heard that bird for 2 or 3 years before I could figure out what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like what Pat was saying, overtones, but also had this sort of percussive, cylindrical, wooden ding, 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 spinning sound. Is beautiful.
Very mysterious sound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, as I was saying earlier, my interest in my participation in improvisations and music has, I think, changed my relationship with birds, because mm-hmm. I used to be about the colors and the shapes and, you know, the spectacle of the sight of my favorite birds, all of which are like wildly colorful. And then when we moved here and I have access to so much nature, I can get energy from I come out here and walk, if I haven't had like a hard bike ride every night, you know, I take at least a mile around these trails, and I never know what I'm gonna find. And I have developed an appreciation for the residents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, and I make a lot of recordings, and some of them I use, and some of them I sort of keep in mind, like we've been talking about the Indigo Bunting, and I love the song so much. I like the way it sounds. I like the way it looks on the app.
Mm-hmm.
The architecture of the sound on Merlin
Oh.
is so cool. It looks like Duchamp, you know, new descending a staircase horizontally instead of vertically. Not just the app, you know. I don't know how.
When you say you like the look, you said you like the look of the sound wave.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, you can tell. Like, you know, I know this from my work in audio engineering. I can, you know, one of the authors I work with, I can't see what words he's saying, but I can tell a lot about his voice and what he's doing just by the waveform.
Mm.
And the same is true on this app. You can tell the patterns. It's really patterning. I think that's what they must be doing in that spectrogram. It's like, you know, they're somehow registering pitch and whatever. But yeah, if something is syncopated, you can see it. If something is like complicated, it's got all these weird angles. And so I this is something I've been interested in fact, because of our dialogue. Like, I wasn't really thinking about the bunting. I was so happy that there's so many around here, because it's a delightful bird. But I wasn't really thinking about that in any profundity. But then when you asked for some of the recordings, that's when I was sort of looking more closely at
mm-hmm.
What the sound was doing. And now I want to do some comparative studies, because as I was saying earlier, last night I was hearing different intervals of sound in the song that I hadn't noticed before. And a few weeks ago, when the band was together and playing, I was mocking or making, I was imitating in a way. I figured out which notes that the bird was playing, and then I was like playing along with that as part of it. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I have developed a relationship with the nature of this area, with a particular sound.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how profound or important that is, but it's something.
So a lot of these insights that you're talking about, you've gained through this media safari, the project you call Media Safari. It started last year, if I remember.
Really, that I came up with this idea earlier this year in the winter and spring. And I can't say that I'm going to stake my identity on it or whatnot. It just seemed to be the right phrase to use because I was, I'd begun this practice of going out often, several times a week with the recording gear, underwater recording gear, this little handheld field recorder, my phone, whatnot. And Media Safari, I've been told it's a good phrase, so I'm going to stick with it for now. Dave Rothenberg says it's a good phrase and it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
The whole connection with safari and exploitation of African animals and that stuff, I'm not so sure about. And even when I talk about the activity as hunting, kind of makes me feel uncomfortable because I don't have any experience on that level. But hey,
mm-hmm.
It is like going out into nature in search of who knows what. Because
mm-hmm.
in this case, you really never know.
Mm-hmm.
Some days, some evenings, a lot of my walks happen in the later part of the day and the evening. And sometimes, depending, I think, on the way, which way the wind blows, I'll hear nothing. Like the birds are all in a leeward side behind a hill somewhere, and that's surprising. The next night I'll go out and there's, dozens of birds because... I don't know why. I don't know about the patterns, performance patterns of birds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been interesting and challenging. And it's like I say in that piece of writing, coming out here and making recordings has actually, I think, improved my ability to make recordings in the studio and at home too.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's so many variables, like the wind, and placement of the microphone that can be, interfere with the fidelity of the recording. But I'm not trying to be hi-fi. I just, I would like to make good recordings. So,
mm-hmm.
why not?
Right. So this piece of essay, it's going to be, I guess, a part of your ongoing writing project. And you describe...
I hope.
Practical things about, like, what your setup looks like and how do you approach... I really love the way you wrote this essay. It's so, written in plain English. Unpretentious. And there's nothing annoying academic thing about it.
That was kind of the point, right? Right, and this idea of, making something useful. But it's also important, to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Right, really, I was just out here, just taking regular, recreational hikes or for some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I realized that I was increasingly becoming involved with making recordings, I better be a little more prepared. Oh, yeah, and I should bring water and food. And, oh, yeah, sunblock and bug spray and all these things. So then I, dedicated one bag,
mm-hmm.
the Media Safari bag. And, I should... tell the readers what's in the bag.
Right, you had a picture of the little
stuff.
Porch of what's that? Powerpuff Girl.
Oh yeah.
Powerpuff.
Oh, that's my. Usually, this is in a Powerpuff Girls bag.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my kids like the Powerpuff Girls. I like the Powerpuff Girls, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't throw that stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's part of your equipment.
But your comments are gratifying to me because it is a. Right now, that essay is the last chapter in this book that I'm just finishing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different than the other chapters, which talk about my work with computers and software and making documentary recordings and the history of audio poetry in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So then, it's just funny, where do I end up? I end up out in the woods making recordings. It's like... Thoreau is finally taking hold of me, and I'm, you know, and like I said, I mean, it's more to it than that, because I do use the recordings for, you know, artistic purposes, and also to just inform my existence. But
and it's all about like how you made little success, and then how you've made mistake, and you're trying to figure out what didn't work, and it's all, I bet, hard to figure out because there's so many factors, like the season, the weather, like you said.
Yeah. Well, it's tricky making recordings outside, or it can be, you know, and then so it's very gratifying when you do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it was such a, especially with the wind, and if you're, you know, if I, this is my basic media safari setup is not with laptops and audio interfaces and all that stuff, but I can do that. I have the equipment to bring a real studio out, and I just, yeah, it's a big pain. But if I'm at a reading that's out in nature, that's like the biggest challenge. And when I can do it, when, like this in the beginning of June with Pierre Joris and recording him at T-Space, so amazing. I was so happy when that recording came out well, and I definitely, these field recordings I've been making helped with that very much high-tech setup, because, okay, the wind is coming from where? He's standing here. It's a very high-powered condenser mic, so it's going to catch everything, including the wind. I don't have the pop filter. There's no way. I don't have any way to filter that. So, yeah, the fact that it came out so well is it's nice. So it's informing my larger practice, the sort of micro-practice within that, for sure. And the birds are a bonus, you know, or whatever else I see, turtles and frogs and snakes. I haven't figured out how to record them yet. Yeah, so.
This is Bequency on WGXC. If you are just joining us, today's guest is Chris Funkhauser, a writer and artist based in Stattsburg, and we are listening to my interview with him about his project Media Safari, which documents natural sounds in the woods alongside the Hudson River.
I really like the how you ended this line that says, as everything, the passing trains, water, birds, caterpillars, poets, recording devices, digital files, and the person making the recordings only ephemerally occupy space. I think that was the last sentence of this essay. And I thought it was quite beautiful, and it made me think of this Japanese cultural concept that I've been kind of thinking about since I started really seriously doing birding, and it's called Ichigo Ichie. And on the Wikipedia it explains it's a cultural concept of treasuring the unrepeatable nature of a moment. The term has been roughly translated as for this time only and once in a lifetime. And it's an expression reminds people to cherish any gathering that they may take part in, citing the fact that any moment in life cannot be repeated, even when the same group of people get together in the same place again. A particular gathering will never be replicated, and thus each moment is always a once in a lifetime experience. And this is sort of like a tea ceremony, Zen concept type of thing.
I love that. That's great. Well, I'm going to ask you more about that. But I will say the book that I've just finished is called Technicians of the Ephemeral. My view on digital media is that none of it's going to last. Beyond who knows how long, a generation or two if we're lucky. So here are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people making digital artwork. At least some of them have to know that the MP3, while we think it, you know, we think of it as so, as this, like, it is a vital thing today, but who knows where down the road. We just had this with flash software, it was dominant 15 years, and one day, bam, it's gone. None of that, you know. So it's this idea that, you know, that's a, it flies in the face of this idea that, you know, life is short, but art is long, you know, sort of famous expressions. Keats's Ode to a Grecian Urn, this idea that we can even, our work now is not like the Michelangelo's David. Mm. It's just, I'll be shocked, you know. I mean, I won't be here, but to think that any of this is going to last seems, you know, just transitory. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what this idea is that you presented or you're just talking about is about too. So
it's also interesting how it's linked to other things that you do. But I thought as you go through all these safaris in this essay, and every time it's different, and your recording captures the, you know, uniqueness of each time you go outside.
Absolutely. Well, anybody who does bird watching must be able to relate to that on some level. I do know a couple of places where the indigo bunting must be nesting.
Right.
But still,
it's
sometimes
different.
They're there, sometimes they're not.
Right.
You know, I don't, as I said to be, you know, earlier, it's, I'm not very sophisticated in any of this. I mean, it's just all the, I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it helps me grow somehow as a person, not because I'm getting lots and lots of knowledge, but just to be able to situate myself in a context that's outside of myself or whoever I'm with. You know, it's like it just expands life in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do people watch birds? Why do people go out and look at birds? There's probably 50 million different reasons, right? And some of them are, right, for the rare exotic bird.
Right.
Yes, I think when my dad probably liked to do that a bit, you know, to go to a place where there were tropical birds. I am interested in the spectacle of birds, but it doesn't have to be that.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky that there's some nice species. Is that what you call birds? Different species? Cardinal is one.
Yeah.
Robin is another. Yeah, all right. So we're lucky to be in a place where there are some really great birds.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
And I really feel more and more that they're special to me because they're here and I see them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That living experience is like what's really special about it. That, I don't know, I just feel
totally
more and more.
Totally ephemeral, totally. This is really a great thing that happened to me last week. I pulled up the driveway in front of my house, and I was pulling up to the house because I had to unload the car, and there was a great blue heron right on the pathway, right outside our house. And I'd never seen this before. I was like, oh my God. And then I stopped the car, and it didn't move. I got out of the car, and it was taking my time. I got enough time to get my camera out and like take some pictures. It still is hanging out there, and then it sort of flew off. I was like, all right, well, that was weird. Mm-hmm. I wonder what was up with that bird. And then I was up at my desk an hour later, and I saw the bird outside my neighbor's house, and it was walking funny. I was like, oh, okay, maybe it's hurt. Maybe it got hurt, and it just ended up over in our area. But then I noticed that I remembered from seeing the great blue heron many times outside my family home that when they're hunting, they have this very peculiar slow walk, and it was hunting for frogs out in the yard. That's what it was doing. It came, instead of being in the swamp, like here you would expect to see a great blue heron, like,
right, and you would think they're
right,
hunting,
but same thing, there were nowhere near any like a little body of water or anything, but it had been so wet. Mm. There are tons of frogs. It was probably like, you know, McDonald's to the, you know, could get anything it wanted right outside. And it was beautiful. I videotaped it, the whole bit. It was such a surprise. And it, you know, I would not remember what I was doing at my desk, you know, I would remember, you know, it was just like an ordinary thing that became extraordinary because of this bird, which had, you know, they're like storks, right? Those birds
are
like
big.
They're huge and very dignified, like, well, I am the boss, you know. I'm very princely or something, you know, maybe that's not right, but elegant, yeah, so.
You are listening to Waveforms WGXC, and this program is Frequency. If you're just joining us, today's guest is Chris Funkhauser, a writer and artist based in Strasbourg, and we are listening to my interview with him about his project Media Safari, which documents natural sounds in the woods alongside the Hudson River.
So I would also like to ask you about your music project, especially the Most Serene Congress. I saw the video of the performance that was linked from the essay. I really enjoyed it. It's got a little bit of like early Kraftwerk feel to the whole thing,
okay. I felt.
Not only because of your flute, but the whole thing. And it was really like enjoyable musically. And so you use lots of field recordings, play, and your band improvised, you and your two other members sort of improvised, reacting to the field recordings or whatever
that's
each other's doing. And I thought it was interesting to see you, like, you switch instruments, like from flute, or you read some writings and then you play some little percussive thing, like you change stuff.
Yes.
And every time you play something, you look like you're really listening. There was particularly this one scene I thought almost funny, that you had this little percussion thing, I don't know what it's called, and then you like hit it, and then you kind of like, you look like you're thinking.
Sure, well.
As if like, what animal is this? And I was wondering if the way you pay attention to sound, is that how you've been always operating as a sound artist? But does this Media Safari type of practice that you've been doing, how has it affected you as a sound artist, if it has changed you in any way?
Well, the reason I first met Pat was at at Bobby Previtt's improv workshop. So, I mean, one of the things, and improvisation is something I've been interested in pretty much always. I mean, I can read music and I appreciate structured music, but I can't do it so well. And I'd rather not, as a matter of fact. I like making stuff up in the moment because of the surprise that offers. So yeah, listening, as we learned in our improvisation workshop, to be a good improviser, you have to be able to hear lots of things at once and sort of filter it and respond instantly, or basically instantly. Well, there's this great book, if you haven't seen it, newly published, called Quantum Listening. It's Pauline Oliveros. And this kind of has been very appealing to me. You could pick it up at Oblong on your way out of town. So it's complicated, right? Because, a band, I'm just lucky to work with people who are willing to indulge these ideas of making recordings of water sounds or bird sounds or insects or whatever. Because these bugs or cicadas, I've been recording them lately and I'm sure we're going to play, but that's going to be very different than like birds chirping, right? Mm-hmm. So I am listening all the time. And trying to figure out, and with the instruments, I like to play different instruments. That band, Most Serene Congress, it started out as a noise band, two basses and a drummer, like really pounding out like krautrock type stuff, improvising. And then I'd throw the flute in while metal was playing in the background, and it was nice, but we kind of grew out of that into something more electronic and drone-y. We don't use the drum kit too often anymore, and these guys are on iPads, so the ambient music, the ambient type of drone with natural sounds has worked well to our benefit. I mean, we have the one, like the Indigo Bunting song we most recently did is like, you know, I'm like rambling on about like political stuff, and then all of a sudden it goes into the bunting, the little notes that I had sort of transposed, and those guys weren't aware of what I was doing, but they have to respond to it, and it becomes something, you know, greater than the original intention. There's no end to weird ideas. For me, I'm 60, and the weird ideas just
keeps coming.
Yeah, like I can hear, you know, it's weird. You maybe even have this relationship with sound, or you do. You know, like you take a shower, the water's running down the drain, and it sounds like an orchestra, you know. So I record that, and then we'll throw that into the software as part of the mix. I mean, the technology, which is ephemeral, does give us a lot of liberty to experiment. Mm-hmm. And really, that's kind of what this is all about. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just messing around. I know there's precedent for it. I know Zach Poff and Dave Rothenberg and tons of... the great Susie Ibarra. Oh, my goodness. Like, the sound walks. And in 2015, I started really narrowing my focus into sound and music rather mm-hmm. than lots. I've done lots of multimedia and, like, the digital poetry research I did. That was about algorithmic generation of language. It was about hypertext, nonlinear writing. It was about visual writing. But now I've put a lot of that to the side and I'm focusing on sound. So this is coming, everything has come together nicely. Mm. I find it to be gratifying. And birds are a part of it because they have great sounds.
Mm-hmm. Special things become special because you have ways and time to pay attention to it. Technology allows us to hear sound that we couldn't hear, and we'd be amazed like how much stuff is actually going on like right here right now. Just because we couldn't see it or hear it doesn't mean it was not happening.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Yes, you're absolutely right. The here and now, just paying attention. This is the kind of what Pauline is getting at in her book. It's like there's always so much sound, and the thing I noticed that was if you concentrate on it, if you you can really start to hear so many things. And with the technology in that essay I talk about, we sure can amplify nature. So that's kind of becomes a matter of attention, you know, just paying attention to what's around you. And I'm not so sure that everybody does that. I'm not trying to throw shade on lots of people, but I see a lot of people like looking at their phones all the time and and so on and so forth, all well and good, but it does sort of distract you from something else you might be. I was lucky to grow up before phones and computers and internet. Our parents just got home from school, come back at dinner time, you know. So I do have, was able to develop a practice of being outside. Enjoy, find ways to enjoy doing it.
So. Yeah, you wouldn't just know how. I don't think I, for one, knew how to pay attention to things, or let alone about hydrophones. Like, I wouldn't have known there's such thing if I weren't involved in wave farm.
Yes, yes.
And all the things people do for us to enhance our senses with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to get to know what people are doing and hanging out with birders who, you know, really like training their ears. Very enlightening experience for me, and it's only happened the past like 5 years or something to me.
The other thing I want to say is this is to do with like the depth of listening is I have tinnitus, which is like 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. I woke up one morning, my ears were ringing. And they haven't stopped. So now that sounds terrible. And when I dwell on it, it can be. But it's two things. One is there are ways to distract yourself from that tone. And so like I'm talking to you and I'm not hearing it, but it's there. Mm. But this area, I swear in the summer, all the sounds that are here, and you're hearing now, we've just heard, there's the birds, there's the insects. I've heard some frogs right there. So, but then there's like a low, you know, we could probably, if we sat here long enough, you start to hear three, four layers of sound. This helping my tinnitus.
Hmm.
It's sort of like unscrambling whatever that is. I don't know. This is just a half-baked theory of mine. But last September, after being here for about a month and a half, I couldn't hear the tone anymore. And I blamed all the frequencies of sound that were surrounding me. So I think it can actually, aside from the health benefits of exercise and taking a walk and all that, I think there are other things I get out of being in nature that are almost intangible, but yet very tangible at the same time.
Yeah, very interesting.
And I don't know any. I've talked to doctors about this. Doctors don't know what. They can't fix tinnitus, you know. So you have to figure out ways to either hypnotize yourself not to hear it, which people do, or, you know, I think meditation helps me with it a lot, you know, because I'm able to sort of block it out. But anyway, also there's all the frequencies of sound at night. Wow, in the summer and nighttime here is so loud.
Oh, it must be.
With the frogs, the insects, So all that sound, and I sleep with the window open right next, you know, my head's right at the window all night long. So it's sort of unscrambling the chaos that, all that chaos unscrambles the chaos of tinnitus, period. I just thought I should say that because I think there are benefits to...
Very solid benefits.
Absorbing sounds in nature, sights in nature. If you're lucky enough to have sight and sound, you know, why not use them?
So this book, well, this essay about your media safari is, you said, the last chapter of the book you're finalizing, finishing right now. And so for those who want to learn about your media safari, should they wait for the book to come out? Like, what's the best way for them to learn more about your work?
Well, the institutional website I have at NJIT is pretty good. That usually is has up-to-date stuff. I don't know what to say. Look me up online. Find my email. I'm happy to share with anybody who's interested. Plus, I imagine I can be reached through WGXC somehow.
That's true.
I don't have a GXC email, but there aren't a lot of Chris Funkhausers out there, especially in Hudson Valley. So I'm happy to engage and talk with anybody who's interested. I do the Poe Radio Show on WGXC.
That's right.
People can find me through that. I don't know about the book. Right now I'm just finalizing the first. Well, actually, it's the third draft of it, but I've got other stuff to do, so I've been trying to do this. My next book is going to be about the radio show, as a matter of fact. So I'm going to try to transport the content of the radio show into book format.
Well, thank you for the great conversation. Well,
thank you for even coming out and spending time. It's fabulous to see both of you.
Indigo Bunting. We listened to some Indigo Bunting recordings that Chris has made in his media safari, except for the first one that was from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs, Eastern Region. And I am talking over underwater recording from his media safari. Thanks to Chris for the wonderful conversation. You can find more information about his work on the New Jersey Institute of Technology, where he's been teaching for a long time. his sort of webpage is on their website, which is at web.njit.edu/tildefunkhouse. That wavy line symbol thing, I have to look up how to read it, and I'm not even sure exactly that's how you read it, but Tilda Funk House, you might just want to search it online, or I am posting the link to the show notes, which you can find on WGXC website, Bequency page, or at bequency@tumblr.com if you're listening, or if you're interested in listening to the past episode of this show, Bequency, you can find them there too at bequency@tumblr.com. And now let's listen to music by Most Serene Congress, the improvisational music group of which Chris is a member, and we're going to listen to the audio of the concert that I mentioned in the interview that took place at Greenkill Gallery in 2023. So I hope you'll enjoy. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency on WJXC. Thank you.
Pastoral utopia becomes rural dystopia.